Good morning, everyone. Like you said, my name is Haley Neely. I am a PhD student at Texas A&M University, and I'm going to be discussing a study we did investigating the use of electrical conductivity as a means to map spring swell potential in vertisols. At this time, I'd also like to acknowledge my co-authors, Drs. Christine Morgan, Kevin McInnes, and Tom Hallmark. So our overall goal for this study was to map the spring swell potential for the improvement of hydrological models. All of the work we did were on vertisols. These soils have a lot of smectite clay, and they shrink and swell quite dramatically with water content. You can see the picture on the left. That's my hand. That's one of the smaller cracks that can occur in these fields. So when you get a rainfall event, as you can see in the graph on the right, precipitation versus runoff, one precipitation event of 100 millimeters per day can either result in complete runoff if the cracks are closed, or complete water capture if those cracks are open. This research was done at the USDA ARS Grassland Soil Water Research Laboratory. This was in Riesel, Texas. This is a Houston black soil. Again, high smectitic clay, high clay content, very large shrink swell capacities. This was also residuum parent material, so they weathered in place from marls and chalks. Also very, very high carbonate content in those parent materials. So we know from these fields, this data was actually collected from soil collected at Riesel, that the coefficient of linear extensibility, or that measurement of shrink swell in the soil, decreases with increasing calcium carbonate content. If you start out around 2 grams per kilogram of calcium carbonate, you get a shrink swell potential about 0.16. You increase that to 6 grams per kilogram, and you cut that in half, or more than half. The NRCS will publish just a single coal value for Houston black, but as we can see from this data, it will vary across the landscape. So if we can map the carbonates in the soil, then we're going to be able to map the shrink swell potential. So we know that conductivity maps are very good at picking up spatial variability, especially in landscapes like this. Very homogeneous clay content across these fields. It's very good at picking up water and a couple of other things as well. This is actually up at Riesel as well. That low section, that very bright yellow section, also corresponds with the shoulder. Shallow parent material, very high calcium carbonate content in that part of the field, and as you expect, also lower water content, lower ECA value. As opposed to the foot slope, lower carbonate values, higher water content, higher ECA. So we know this, so we were interested to see if you could actually tease out carbonate content from the water content in landscapes like this. So again, our goal, map the cracking potential of these soils to improve these simulations of infiltration and runoff. We're going to do this in two ways. First, we need to define the relationship between electrical conductivity and calcium carbonate content. And two, we need to develop a model predicting the shrink swell potential from an ECA map. Now, this is very preliminary. We haven't got to the model yet. We are working on it. So we're pretty much going to be talking about the first one today. So really briefly, on soil electrical conductivity, you can kind of think of it as hydraulic conductivity. But instead of moving water, we're now moving electrons. So factors that will increase electrical conductivity include salinity, increasing water content, and clay content. Rhodes, Ratz, and Prather published a very nice publication about 1976. Parceling out from bulk electrical conductivity or the apparent soil electrical conductivity into particle surface and pore water conductivity. Also, they add in a tortuosity component or transmission coefficient. So as the soil dries out, the water films become thinner and more discontinuous in the soil. The electrons prefer to travel through the water. That path becomes more tortuous, more difficult to go through. So therefore, a lot of these relationships, as the graph on the right implies, are nonlinear due to a lot of the complexities of electron flow in soil. So we first started with a laboratory experiment. We took field samples from different areas that had different calcium carbonate contents of 0.04, 3.1, and a 6.2 grams per kilogram. We packed them to 3 different bulk densities and added water to about 3 different gravimetric water contents. We always packed them to the same volume, and this is really important when you're doing laboratory resistivity measurements. These were air-dry grounds, so the structure was no longer intact in these samples. And from this, we calculated the volumetric water content and the air-filled porosity. So the best predictor, or the nicest relationship we found, was conductivity versus the air-filled porosity in the soil, so just the pore spaces filled by the air itself. There's not a lot of separation. We were a little bit disappointed between the 0.04 and the 3.1 grams per kilogram of calcium carbonate content. But once you got up a little higher, into the 6.2, we started to see a decrease in the conductivity, especially at the lower air-filled porosities, which would correspond to higher volumetric water contents and higher bulk densities. But as you all know, that's very difficult to get out into the field with any sort of accuracy on non-air-dried ground soil. So this is similar data, looked at just the volumetric water content. A little bit more sporadic, a little bit more spread, but still at the higher volumetric water contents, we're still seeing a little decrease in the conductivity due to an increase in calcium carbonate. So to the field, we moved to electromagnetic induction. We used an EM38 from Geonics Limited. We just used a vertical dipole for this study. This instrument has an approximate sensing area of about 1 square meter and about a depth of 1.5 meters, depending on a lot of other things, its depth of measurement. It has an integrated response, so it's not equally sensitive to all depths the same way. We used the depth-weighted response curve from Geonics itself, from a technical note that they published, which says that it has a maximum sensitivity around 40 centimeters. That might not be true in wet clay soils, but we did use this just to kind of standardize our data. We also temperature corrected everything to 25 degrees centigrade. We used two sites up at Riesel, and we did two sites and two surveys per site, one with dry moisture conditions and one with wet. So site one was a smaller field, only about 40 by 60 meters in size. Again, a wet and a dry survey were done. This was a very dense survey. 1 meter transects were done. Soil cores were taken for water content and characterization. This is a relative elevation map of that field, only about 1 meter difference in the highest and lowest points of the field, and you can actually see the circular Gilgai in that field that the GPS was picking up. These are the resulting ECA maps from those two surveys. ECA for the wet survey ranged from about 65 to 162 millisiemens per meter, as opposed to 7 to 32 millisiemens per meter for the dry survey. Totally expect this. This instrument is very good at picking up water content, and it was actually really good at picking up the Gilgai in the wet survey, I'm sure due to the ponded water throughout the winter, higher water content in those microlows. So site two was larger. It was 7.3 hectares in size. Again, two sampling dates at two different moisture contents. This was a drug behind an ATV on a sled for about 10-meter transects approximately, and again, the same soil cores were taken. Elevation difference for this field was about 10 meters from the summit down to the foot slope, and there were no obvious Gilgai in this field. And these are the resulting ECA maps from that field. Again, much higher ECA values for the wet survey versus the dry. Again, totally expected. So on to the results. We ran a multiple linear regression model. We had to transform our ECA data using a natural logarithm to kind of make this a more linear relationship. And we used calcium carbonate, gravimetric water content, bulk density, and an intercept term. The values you see are the p-values, how well these things corresponded in our models. I want to point out that calcium carbonate content was better predicted in the wet survey than in the dry survey. And if you look at both surveys together, gravimetric water content was very significant in this study. This is results from site two. We did not have water content and bulk density data for our wet survey, so we just used calcium carbonate, where we did have everything for our September survey. Calcium carbonate, very significant in that wet survey, may not proved to be that way if we actually had some of our other parameters in that model. But it was still fairly significant even in the September survey, which was much drier, and gravimetric water content was not significant at all. I'll show you two graphs from these surveys. This is gravimetric water content versus the conductivity for all three sites that we had water content data for. Site one, wet, higher water content, higher conductivity. And the two dry sites are down at the bottom. They do fall on a fairly nice relationship. We would prefer this to be a little bit tighter, but you can see that if you use some temperature corrections, and maybe we can get this a little bit better, they are related, which does make sense. These fields are across the road from each other, should be very similar soil. And this is calcium carbonate content versus conductivity for the two wet surveys in March. We get a better relationship from site 2 with an R-squared of 0.7 as opposed to site 1 with an R-squared of 0.4. This might be due to the fact that site 2 had a better, a larger spread of calcium carbonate contents and a lot higher values in that field at some of the points. And this does make some sense from our laboratory data, where we really didn't see a decrease in conductivity until we got up to the higher calcium carbonate contents. So this does make sense. So in conclusion, our lab and field experiments did show appreciable calcium carbonate response at a higher soil water content. And the response was still maybe there in one of our sites, but it was less apparent when the soil water was less there. So then if you wanted to be able to do this, you really do need to go out when the soil is wet, take out some of that soil water if you're getting as close to field capacity as possible, more homogeneous water contents throughout the field. We will be going back into the lab after this, trying to improve our laboratory understandings of the decrease in calcium carbonate from the conductivity, and maybe even going to some of Alex Brantney's work, trying to fit a model, a more mechanistic model, to this data. So I'd like to acknowledge the National Science Foundation for funding for this project, as well as the hydropodology crew, Heather Watson, Jason Ackerson, Catherine Kobolinski, and Diana Fisher, as well as the research staff at the Grassland Soil and Water Research Laboratory. Thank you.
Any questions?
You also have a mismatch of scales, right? Because mm-hmm. your instrument works in 1 square meter,
mm-hmm.
and the sample is
just a core.
Sure.
Yes.
So this mismatch might be part of the reason why you have not as tight a relationship
mm-hmm.
as you would like.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. So is there any sense to try to overcome this mismatch by just taking maybe several samples within a footprint of the instrument?
Mm-hmm. Well, in site 2, actually, it doesn't vary as much between even a 10-meter space because of the lack of Gilgai, but certainly if we wanted to do this better on a Gilgai field, that site 1 where you have very large differences between short, that would be a good method to do that. We actually took a soil cores down to meter and a half and then depth-weighted averaged those, so that depth-weighted response curve that I used, we actually used all the data and then fitted a function to that. So we actually did use all the data.
So for the profiling mm-hmm. of the content, you used this response of...
Yes.
Have you tried with the Caligari and colleagues simulation in play, because the response function that they suggest for this kind of soils...
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. See from the McNeil one, because the McNeil relation is valid for only low induction numbers. But
mm-hmm.
In place of this assumption is not that accurate.
No, and you're absolutely right. In fact, if you just look at the different soil core sections and you compare those with soil water content, we actually did get a stronger relationship between the 60 and 70 centimeter core sections. But we just use this just to try to get a clearer picture and just kind of try to fit all of our data. But no, that's something that my group may be working on, is maybe trying to get a better response curve to actually have more accurate results. You're absolutely right. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. I think that's...